I'd like to first thank the organizers for giving me this opportunity to talk about this topic. So what I'd like to do today is to tell you what the status of this field is, rather than just telling you what I have done in the last whatever number of years, because I thought that would be probably more useful. So so I'll be asking more of a question rather than answering those questions. So you will see that this field is essentially completely open. So yeah, good. So in fact, I'll be mostly talking about a quantum spin liquid state. So this is the usual cartoon picture we use to represent the quantum spin liquid. So it's a quantum parallel magnet, and also it's a correlated insulator with no broken translation symmetry. So one way to represent that is to think about a quantum spin liquid wave function as a linear superposition of valence bond covering. So the original idea was that if you only consider one kind of valence bond covering of the lattice, then of course you break translation symmetry. But when you take the linear superposition of those, then you restore the translation symmetry, so you end up with some kind of spin zero state, the quantum parallel magnetic state with translation invariance. So so this was the cartoon picture. And up until 15 years ago, the candidate materials were very limited. So this is the article that Patrick Lee wrote around 2008. And around that time, many materials were discovered for the quantum spin liquid state. But I have to mention, though, that around that time, there were some good theoretical models that could be solved numerically. And in fact, using a sign problem-free quantum Monte Carlo, in various spin models in two and three dimensions, we knew that ground state actually has to be a quantum spin liquid state. So but nonetheless, the candidate materials were quite limited. So the title tells you that, end to the drought of quantum spin liquid. So there was a dramatic title. So now I would say we now have a sea of quantum spin liquid state. Candidate quantum spin liquid state. And you are quite right that, none of these things is actually conformed. So everything is candidate. Yeah. So we have a lot of material candidate for quantum spin liquid state. So they are like organic materials based on triangular lattice. There's Gagome lattice materials. There's something called hyper-Gagome. It's a three-dimensional version of the two-dimensional Gagome lattice. And there are materials based on a particle lattice. And then there are new class of materials. And lastly, there are materials called Kitae materials. And it's based on honeycomb and a three-dimensional version of the honeycomb lattice. So one thing I'd like to emphasize here is that in the original research of basically trying to find quantum spin liquid candidate materials, people were focusing mainly on the geometric frustration. So basically they were trying to find the geometrical, the lattice structure that promotes the magnetic frustration. So that's the reason why they looked at things like triangular lattice, Gagome lattice, and particle lattice, and things like that. But more recently, the emphasis has been shifted in such a way that rather than focusing on the geometric structure of the lattice, perhaps the interaction itself is frustrating. So that's a new thing. So if you consider magnetic ions with strong spin orbit coupling, it turns out that you could generate some kind of bond-dependent interactions, and that gives us a large frustration, even though the underlying lattice is not geometrically frustrating. So this is a new trend. So from that point of view, this Kitaev exact solution to his honeycomb model, Kitaev now has many models, so I have to specify which model I'm talking about here. So this is the Kitaev's famous honeycomb lattice model. So this is the bond-dependent Ising interaction. So on the honeycomb lattice, there are X-type, Y-type, and Z-type bond. Then for each bond direction, say for example along the red bond, so that I call X type, you have an Ising interaction along X direction, so SIX, SJX, and things like that. So he solved this model using Mayana fermion representation. So he introduced a four-myriad fermion like that, and for each spin operator, each spin operator can be represented as a product of one of the myriad fermion, B myriad fermion, and C myriad fermion. And there is a constraint on the myriad fermion operators. So the main idea is that if you do so, then each spin operator is essentially represented by this kind of a four-myriad fermion Hilbert space. Then you arrange this on a honeycomb lattice, then you notice that essentially all these B-myriad fermions are bound to the bond, so they are basically localized, they don't move around. On the other hand, C-myriad fermions are basically free, so C-myriad fermions propagate freely on the honeycomb lattice, and that gives us some kind of a band structure. And given that this is a honeycomb lattice, essentially you get a Dirac fermion dispersion at the K point of the Brillouin zone, just like a graphene. So for example, more formally, it turns out, if you rewrite this model in terms of myriad fermions, then this combination of operators, basically commuted Hamiltonian, it becomes a C number, and that's the reason why it becomes a quadratic Hamiltonian. We can solve it. And more importantly, you can define this some kind of loop operator around the hexagon. So this amounts to thinking about product of six spin operators around the hexagon. And that operator also commutes with the Hamiltonian. So what that means is that the ground state should belong to one of those plus minus one sector. So it turns out that for this particular model, the ground state is in the so-called zero flux sector. So all the essentially you can take all the uij link variable to be plus one, and that's the reason why you just get a simple Dirac fermion band structure. So this is pretty well-known solution, and a lot of people know about this. It's very popularized, actually. But perhaps what is less known is that there is some connection to the superconductor. So instead of using a myriad fermion basis like that, you can take a linear combination of those myriad fermions to make complex fermion, so usual complex fermion. And if you do this unitary transformation, then the previous constraint on the myriad fermion operators essentially becomes this constraint. Basically, you end up with this number of, average, the number of complex fermion per site is exactly one, that kind of constraint. And the spin operator can be represented in terms of this usual fermionic operator. So in fact, to some people, this is a more familiar representation than the myriad fermion represents. This is usually what we use for the Parton construction, fermionic Parton construction. And if you do that, the Kitaev Hamiltonian can be mapped to this model. Essentially, it becomes the BCS model. And this is the Hopping, Hopping amplitude, Hopping process. This is basically a pairing part. So it becomes a BCS Hamiltonian. But the ground state of this model is obviously not a superconductor because of this constraint that there should be exactly one particle per size. So we know that ground state is an insulator, but nonetheless, Hamiltonian has this BCS form. So what this suggests is that, in fact, if you look at this BCS Hamiltonian, we know that this belongs to, say, class BD1, a spin triplet superconductor. So one can imagine that if you start from a spin triple superconductor like this, say imagine that now I have say average number of particle per site is one. So I mean in the superconductor, obviously you should allow charge fluctuation. That if you project to the say one particle per site constrained Hilbert space, you can do that by say increasing the Hubbard U to the infinity. They essentially tells you that the projected version of spin triple superconductor should be a Kitaev spin locator. So in some sense, the spin triple superconducting structure is built into the Kitaev spin locator state. So that's one thing that I wanted to point it out. Okay, so next I'd like to discuss what kind of material candidates are available for Kitaev spin locator state. Yeah.
How do you see why it becomes gapless in the Gibbs-Work projection?
You mean here?
Yeah.
In this process, it's not so obvious, but everything is built into this the pairing, matrix element for the pairing and Hopping. So essentially, what happens is remember that in the original Kitaev model, it's essentially a bond-dependent interaction. So it turns out that if you look at it's been tree preparing amplitude that actually depends on the bond, three different bond. So it actually, you have to define this spin triplet pairing amplitude for different quantization axes for the three different orientations. So this, yeah, so that's the, you know, this, so if you do that, then somehow the quasi particle spectrum turns out to be Dirac formula like for this particular
model. So even before the Hubbard, even before the Gutzwiller projection.
Yeah, you do have a gap spectrum. Yeah, you still have a nodal spectrum. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so guitar material. I don't think that Alexei ever imagined that his name will be associated with the materials. So, but you know, that's what happened. So, okay. So, so how this thing can possibly happen? So this is a very weird interaction. You have bond-dependent Ising interaction. So these people realize that this can happen if your local moment has a very strong spin-orbit coupling. So for example, this happens for the iridium 4+ or ruthenium 3+ ions if they form a local moment. So there are five electrons either 5d or 4d orbital. And if you do that, then without going to too much details, if you include strong spin-orbit coupling, then the energy level splitting due to spin-orbit coupling is such that the effective degree of freedom acts like a pseudo-spin half degree of freedom. And this wave function for this state, some spin-orbital entangled state. It's not a spin-only degree of freedom. So it's some spin-orbit coupled, you know, pseudo-total argument of half state. And in this case, one can show that you can generate guitar interaction like this by using the usual super exchange process. So you have a d orbital on the iridium side, and there's a p orbital at the oxygen side. Then by considering the textbook, you know, exchange process, you can show that this kind of consideration leads to the guitar interaction. So it's kind of nice. You can actually make these models. It's kind of cool. But this is true only if you include only the super exchange processes. But one thing we have to remember is that we are talking about 4D and 5D orbitals for those magnetic ions, and those orbitals are quite extended. So it turns out that the real life, there's also a significant overlap, direct overlap between D orbital. So there's some kind of direct exchange processes also exist. And because of this direct exchange process, you immediately generate other interactions. So for example, you would generate usual Heisenberg interaction and also what we call symmetric anisotropic interaction. So the point is that this is definitely generated, but only if you include only the super exchange process. But if you also include direct exchange process, you generate other kinds of interaction. In fact, yeah.
Is there a natural sign for each one of these?
No. So this can actually have any sign. It doesn't have to be. So JK gamma can change the sign. So the only thing. So for example, one thing you can show is that on the honeycomb lattice like this, if you require all the lattice symmetries, and if I insist that spin model has to be only nearest neighbor interaction, and this is the only thing you get. So there's no other interaction. This is all you have for the nearest neighbor spin model. But the sign is not universal. It depends on the orbital overlap and things like that. It depends on the details. Yeah. But this form is universal. For the nearest neighbor model, for the ideal honeycomb lattice, this is all you get. Yeah. So for example, just to give you an idea what it looks like, if I take the X bond, remember that for the XYZ bond, you have an Ising interaction like that. But then in addition to this Ising interaction, you have this additional interaction. It's along the X bond, you get this SY, SZ, SY kind of interaction, right? So yeah, for example, you can appreciate that, for example, if one of the expectation value becomes finite, imagine that SZ expectation value becomes finite in some state, then this term will act like a transverse field. To that Ising degree of freedom. So it looks like you can never avoid the transfer field Ising model. But yeah. Yeah. So it gives you a quite a large magnetic anisotropy. So that's one thing you can appreciate. Good. So these are the candidate materials. So there we have 2D honeycomb lattice materials here. Iridium's form a honeycomb lattice. Here, ruthenium ion form a honeycomb lattice. And there are three-dimensional versions of this. So it turns out that with the same chemical formula, you can have a different structure. So this is called alpha, beta, gamma. So it turns out the beta and gamma polymorphs form a three-dimensional structure. I'll show you what it looks like. But point is that in order of this material, there is a magnetic order. So if you do, if you don't do anything, then this material order magnetically. Like there's a so-called zigzag magnetic order. It's the incommensurate magnetic order, except for this guy. So the way that this material is made is that you start from this material. So this material is a layered honeycomb lattice system. And there is a lithium in the plane and also between the plane. And they claim they replace all the lithium between the plane by hydrogen. Yeah? So then you sort of decouple all this, basically there's no lithium. So if you do that, then it turns out that magnetic order is suppressed. So the parent material has an incommensurate spiral magnetic order, but by doing this intercalation, you can suppress the magnetic order. So that's basically the claim. So except for this material, if you don't do anything, all this material order magnetically. So you may say it's so boring, right? There's no spin like it.
Question. Yeah. People know how strong the disorder is in the third material.
But could you say again? So that's a very complicated question. I think I will go back to that. I may be able to go back to that question. Maybe I can postpone that. Actually, there are a lot of disorder. That's the short answer. Yeah. But it's not so obvious. So that's the second answer. Maybe I can tell you, NMR doesn't see the disorder. But a lot of first principle calculation tells you that there must be a lot of disorder. So there's some contradiction between what we see in the NMR and what you expect from the first principle calculation. Yeah. It's a very complex question. Yeah. Okay, so here, suppression of magnetic order was achieved by hydrogen intercalation. For ruthenium chloride 3, there's this famous experiment that if you apply a magnetic field, you can suppress the zigzag order. And then for this three-dimensional system, you apply a pressure, and for sufficiently large pressure, hydrostatic pressure, you can suppress the magnetic order. So the question is, if you suppress the magnetic order, and then what, right? Then doesn't mean that you actually get a quantum spin leaky state, or you get some boring paramagnetic state. So.
Known if it's case in insulator
those pressures. So it's known that these are all good insulators. So that part is clear.
Even under high pressure.
Yeah, even under high pressure, it remains metal. So it remains insulator. Also, according to NMR experiment, there is no magnetic order. There's no line splitting. Yeah.
Yeah, when you say NMR, you mean on the intercalating hadrons or what?
But could you say again?
NMR on the intercalating hadrons.
Yeah, so they did NMR on both lithium site and hydrogen site. Yeah. Good. So this is what the three-dimensional structure looks like. The reason why I'm showing you this is probably a less familiar structure. So this hyper honeycomb is a bit of a misnomer because there's no hexagon on this lattice. In fact, the smallest loop on this lattice is actually a 10-sided loop, and they are not a planar loop. Yeah? But you notice that the local connectivity is the same. Each side is connected to three other sides. So you could assign an XYZ bond, just like the honeycomb lattice case. So in fact, as a material, this is actually much more ideal than any of the 2D system, in the sense that all the bond lengths are about the same, and the angle between the bond is almost 120 degrees. So it's a very ideal structure. But nonetheless, there's a magnetic order at 38 Kelvin. So we also know from experiment that there's a strong magnetic anisotropy. Interestingly, the Kitai model can be also solved on this lattice. Actually, not surprisingly, only the local structure is important. The only difference is that the excitation spectrum is basically described by the nodal line in the momentum space. Instead of Dirac fermion, you get a nodal line. If you like, it's like semi-metal spectrum for the Majorana fermion. So it's kind of interesting state.
It's not a lot stable on this location?
Yes. Yeah, just like this is stable in the renormalization group sense, because the density of set goes to zero. So any short range interaction is irrelevant perturbation. Small short range interaction is irrelevant perturbation. So it is stable, yeah. So it has all the interesting properties, like, you know, use your nodal line CMRR. Like if you look at the boundary, that you have this famous drum head state and things like that. So all these things exist in this kind of K-type Sprenkel state. Okay, but experimentally we know that the ground state is magnetically ordered. Actually, this Radu-Koldea determined the magnetic ordered structure. So it turns out that it's a very complex magnetic structure. It's called non-coplanar counter-propagating incommensurate spiral order. What does that mean? Okay. But without thinking much, you know that it's a complex order. It's complex order. So it turns out that the simple model can describe the emergence of this phase. So using this, okay, so you can solve a classical model. And you know, to get this phase, we know that both the K-type interaction and this additional gamma interaction has to be much, much bigger than the Heisenberg interaction. So in fact, you can map out the entire phase diagram, and I'm not planning to explain all this. So just to tell you that, you know, one way to draw this phase diagram is you parameterize JK gamma in terms of those angles. So for example, this will be an anti-ferro sign K-type model, so meaning K is positive. Here, K will be negative. So we know that these 2 points are, you know, quantum spin liquid ground state. And this is anti-ferromagnetic Heisenberg point, ferromagnetic Heisenberg point. The center is a gamma-only model. It's like that. Okay. So important thing is that by combining, you know, some first principle calculation and strong coupling expansion, we can establish this material is somewhere here. And it turns out that this green part essentially gives us this very complex magnetic order. So what I'm trying to say is that this model has some truth in it. That's what I'm trying to say. So this model can describe the observed magnetic order. And the fact that it can describe the very complex order, you can tell from the name, right? It's a very complex order, suggests that there's some truth in that model. So that's what I'm trying to emphasize. In fact, you know, it's not that far from a ferromagnetic type point. In fact, in this analysis, one can show that you should have a ferro sign. So this, in fact, gave us some hope that by tweaking this material in some way, we may be able to reach a ferromagnetic type point. You may have this hope. So brave experimentalists tried the following. So they applied hydrostatic pressure. And then they found that above, say, 2 to 2.5 gigapascal, the magnetic order is indeed suppressed. Yeah, it's kind of interesting, isn't it? Okay. So okay. So then the question is, am I actually getting a K-type Sprenkel? Yeah. So it turns out that it's actually in some sense, it's going opposite way. So we were here, and it turns out that if you apply a pressure, then according to more microscopic calculations, you're actually approaching you're actually getting far away from the K-type point. You're actually getting away from it. But instead, you're approaching this the gamma interaction limit, so meaning that this term becomes dominant. And we know from classical analysis that if you only have this term, then this model is also highly frustrating. You end up with exponentially large number of equally unhappy spin configuration, just like a K-type point. So one may suspect that ground state of this model may also be a Sprenkel. We just don't know. It's not exactly solvable. So anticipating that you may actually get a Sprenkel different from K-type Sprenkel, actually, Yuanming Lu and I have a paper classifying a possible Sprenkel state of Hamiltonian of this kind. This is a pattern construction and a PSG classification. So if you're interested in, yeah.
From first principle or strong coupling expansion, is it obvious that all the further neighbor terms or higher you know, more spin terms.
So those interactions are actually present. Yeah.
So the stars are much smaller.
Yeah, but we can show that those are much smaller than the nearest neighbor interactions. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, and in fact, you can include those interactions, small interactions, and do some kind of classical simulation.
Okay.
Then still you are somewhere close here, rather than around here. Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to switch the gear because this is actually the hottest thing on the table. So everybody's interested in alpha ruthenium chloride 3 these days. Okay. So this is a honeycomb, again, honeycomb lattice material. It's a magnetic order below like 7 Kelvin. The magnetic order is zigzag order. So as it is, it's not very interesting. Okay, so, but then people found that, initially people found that if you look at the neutron scattering spectrum, so essentially you are measuring a spin one excitation spectrum as a function of energy in this case. It's actually the spectrum at the Jones center. So you can say Q equals zero, but energy dependent scattering amplitude. So they see, so below magnetic ordering transition temperature, they see the spin wave excitation. But on top of that, they see some kind of continuum excitation. But what is interesting is that even after you heat up the system so that magnetic order is destroyed, so that the spin waves are all gone, but your continuum still stays. So they speculated that perhaps this continuum come from some kind of nearby or proximate spin liquid. But this is not a very well-defined concept, but nonetheless, there was the speculation. So the general expectation is that in a spin liquid state, since spinons are not carrying spin one quantum number, so even if spin is conserved, spinon carries a spin half quantum number. So you know, to create a spinon excitation, you have to create pairs of those. So you end up with some kind of continuum of excitation, and that's like a joint density of state of two spinon excitation, right? So this was the idea, mainly that perhaps there's a coupling constant, so you are here in a zigzag order, but maybe very close to spin liquid. At some finite temperature, you may be affected by the nearby spin liquid state. So that was kind of the original thinking. So this is a more recent neutron scattering data. So again, what actually happens is that now you apply a magnetic field. So this is the magnetic field in the plane. So this is actually along the B axis. So this is the honeycomb. This honeycomb, so the magnetic field direction is along that direction. Then one can show that after applying 7 Tesla, the zigzag magnetic order is gone. And there's some intermediate magnetic field range where they don't see any magnetic order. But above, say, 9 Tesla, looks like you are entering some kind of a polarized paramagnet. Important thing here is that they see a spin wave excitation here in the zigzag order state. They can also see a spin wave excitation in a polarized paramagnetic state, but they don't see any spin wave excitation in between. They only see a continuum. On top of that, for the magnetic zigzag order state and the polarized paramagnetic state, they see a dispersion along the momentum along the third direction, namely the momentum associated with the perpendicular to the plane direction. So they see that the spin wave excitations are fully three-dimensional, both here and here. But in between, you only see a two-dimensional continuum, meaning that there's no dispersion along the third dimension. Yeah? So this may be taken as an evidence that this is some kind of mostly two-dimensional disorder state. So the speculation is that perhaps this guy, may correspond to some kind of spin liquid state.
So do they have data with the field out of the
pen? Not in this experiment, yeah. Yeah, not in this experiment.
Why do they do that?
Actually, if you apply a magnetic field along the perpendicular direction.
Yeah, but you can't
do it. That's right, so that experiment is not done.
Yeah.
And you need a different neutron scattering setup. I think this is the easiest setup for them to apply a magnetic field, yeah. I think it's pretty hard for them to apply a magnetic field, between these two axes, yeah.
Is the effect predominantly something like Zeeman, or also those big orbital effects in the gamma K and J are changing?
I think that in these systems, the magnetic field actually couples to the total angular momentum J, not to the spin or L.
Yeah.
separately. So I think that it couples obviously both. Yeah. Okay, so here is the sort of, you know, if you like, mental picture. So in the zero magnetic field, there's some coupling constant. So imagine that my alpha leucine chloride 3 is somewhere here, and this is some nearby spin-Lucas state. Imagine that I apply an in-plane field. Then say, imagine that you can suppress the magnetic ordering temperature. Then if this is a spin-Lucas, by applying in-plane field, perhaps you can get into some kind of chiral spin-Lucas state, tiny muscle symmetry breaking spin-Lucas state. But eventually, for a large enough field, you should get a polarized spiral magnet. So if this is true, then by starting, you know, if you fix your parameter here, then by applying in-plane magnetic field, you can go from, say, zigzag order, chiral spin-Lucas, polarized spiral magnet. So that's what you hope for. You know, perhaps this is possible. Yeah? Okay. And actually, inspired by this picture, the number of papers written, I think that he gave a talk yesterday, I suppose, right? But all these papers mostly study anti-ferro-Kitae model in a perpendicular magnetic field. I think that for real material, I think that ferro sign for the Kitae is more relevant. Yeah. Okay. So here's a famous experiment that everybody is scratching their head about, right? So here is a thermal conductivity measurement. So the question was, can you actually probe this intermediate field spin-Lucas state by doing a thermal transport? So Yuji Machida's group in Kyoto University found that in the magnetic field range where you see the disappearance of magnetic order, they see as quantized thermal hole conductivity. So I think it was mentioned yesterday, right? Yeah. Okay. So this happens somewhere around here. And this so-called half quantization is a consequence of the fact that if you get into some kind of chiral spin-Lucas state, so this is again already done by Alexei Kitaev, when you apply a Zeeman magnetic field, then you generate this kind of term. And this term gap out the Majorana fermion. And what actually happens is that the bulk is gapped, you enter a chiral spin-Lucas state, and you have a gapless Majorana azimuth. And that should give us thermal hole conductivity that's quantized by, say, you know, factor half, essentially. So that's basically the expectation. And amazing thing is that experimentalists claim they found this, right? So that's amazing. Okay. So now the question is this too good to be true? So there are two main issues that one has to understand. So first of all, according to the experiment, the hole angle is very, very small. What that means is that the longitudinal thermal conductivity, that's the bulk thermal conductivity, that's 1,000 times bigger than the transport done by the edge. So strictly speaking, the bulk and edge are actually not very well separated, if you think about it, right? So it's rather surprising that you actually get a quantization, the thermal hole conductivity. Because, you know, if this was like quantum hole state, you wouldn't see a quantization. If the longitudinal conductivity is 1,000 times larger than hole conductivity, there's no way that you see a quantization. So this issue was sort of solved by these two groups. Basically, they show that, well, you know, in principle, this is possible. If you assume that the thermal equilibrium is mostly, thermal equilibration mostly happens near the boundary, so between, say, Majorana azimuth and phonon. Imagine that all the heat exchange occurs there. Then the coupling between this Majorana azimuth and phonon can actually help to make this quantized effect visible, observable. And in fact, in order to have that quantization, they show that you have to measure the temperature with respect to phonon temperature, not the Majorana fermion temperature. So, but you know, it looks like in principle. It is doable. So another issue is that, as I emphasized, there are other interactions in this material. And in fact, according to first principle calculation, this gamma interaction is as large as the Kitaev interaction. And the reason why you get into a zigzag order without magnetic field is because there's also other interaction, like a third neighbor interaction. So the real model is rather complicated. And in particular, this gamma interaction is quite large. It's as large as a guitar interaction, right? So, and we also know from experiment and comparing that with the theory calculation, we know that gamma interaction is actually significant because according to neutron scattering experiment, they see a what they call a star-shaped continuum. So this is like a finite energy slice of the scattering continuum. And by doing exact diagonalization calculation by computing the spin structure factor, one can show that in order to reproduce this, you need to have a significant gamma term. Otherwise, you cannot possibly have a star shape like this. So this is due to other interactions, like a gamma interactions. Similarly, according to experiment, there's a huge magnetic anisotropy between, in-plane and out-of-plane magnetic field orientation. For example, for the in-plane field, you can easily kill zigzag magnetic order. This is the magnetic field strength where the zigzag order dies. So around like 7 Tesla, you can kill the magnetic order. But if you apply a magnetic field along the perpendicular direction, basically zigzag order survives up to very large field. In fact, people believe that it requires like 100 Tesla to kill the zigzag magnetic one. And in order to explain this, again, we need a gamma interaction. So if you add a gamma interaction, it's pretty easy to explain why such a large magnetic anisotropy actually arises. Okay, so since the largest energy scale in this problem is K and gamma, so we decided that we are going to look at this model. So why don't we take two largest energy scale in the problem? So take a K and gamma model and study this problem. It turns out that it's actually rather difficult problem, in fact, because the K-only model is highly frustrated. Gamma-only model is also highly frustrated. So this is sort of the phase diagram we obtained by doing a IDMRG calculation, so by changing the strengths of gamma and K. So again, this Kitaev spin liquid is stable against the small short range interaction. So this is stable up to some point. Then there is a force of transition to some other state. And we think that this state is also some kind of spin liquid, but it breaks a large rotational symmetry. So if you like, this may be taken as some kind of pneumatic spin liquid state. But on the other hand, here, if I now add the third neighbor Heisenberg interaction, that's the next largest energy scale in the problem, then you indeed get a zigzag magnetic order for this area. Very recently, the Heyang's group at Toronto showed that if you add another interaction like this, so this is a little bit more complicated, but this can arise in real material if you distort the oxygen octahedra around the iridium ion slightly, then this term is also allowed. But even with a very, very small interaction like this, this pneumatic spin liquid is immediately replaced by the zigzag magnetic order. But this part is still stable, but replace that by magnetic order state. So very interestingly, now you apply
So the without the top line, the spin liquid.
Yeah.
Should I just think about it as the spin liquid in the exact solution, but with anisotropic bonds?
No, it's different.
It's totally different.
Yeah, I think it's different. It's not very clear to me. Yeah, because. So I didn't explain the details, but this is what we did. So of course there is no magnetic order here, but then we can measure the integral entropy. The integral entropy has a small jump, but integral entropy around here still remains very high, first of all. And secondly, another thing we did was we actually looked at what we call momentum resolved transfer-matrix eigenvalues. So transfer-matrix eigenvalues gives you the correlation length, right? So 1 over the correlation length will be the mass gap. But there's a way to see this as a function of momentum.
Cylinder.
Yeah, in the cylinder geometry. So in the Kitai point, we exactly reproduce that, the transformatics momentum resolved transformatics eigenvalues of that cylinder geometry by using the exact solution. So the numerics knows about this. So it's kind of nice. In fact, when you change the gamma here, that spectrum continuously evolves. Then when you encounter this first order transition, suddenly there's a jump in the transformatics eigenvalue spectrum. But what we know from the spectrum that is that here you do see a coherent excitation. If you interpret the momentum reserve transformatics eigenvalue as an excitation spectrum, then there is a continuously evolving excitation spectrum. And that pattern is pretty similar to here. It's just that the only difference is that you break rotation symmetry. So precise answer is I don't know, right? So from the transformatics eigenvalue, it looks like it's very similar to the Kitai Spinnaker, as if you just break the rotation symmetry. But other than that, I don't really have a lot of information. So this phase is very interesting. I just don't know how to further characterize this phase. And when you add the other interactions, this guy is actually more fragile than this phase. So this part is more fragile to magnetic order, but that's basically what happened here. Okay, so I just want to show you this. This is the 24 site exact diagonalization. So you have to take this with a grain of salt. There's always a finite size effect. But nonetheless, notice that they apply a magnetic field. Now, the 5 degree means you're applying a magnetic field 5 degree away from the perpendicular direction. 90 degree means you're applying a magnetic field along the plane. So according to these numerics, without magnetic field, remember that when I increase gamma, so gamma is increasing this direction here, you have a Kitaev spinnaker becoming a zigzag magnetic order. But then when you apply a field like that, it turns out that there's some kind of intermediate phase that seems to be continuously connected to this zero field limit. So if you believe this phase diagram, indeed, with this set of interaction, if you go from zigzag magnetic order, when you increase magnetic field, you can go from zigzag magnetic order to the intermediate Kitaev Spinnaker to the polarized state. So if this is true, then this part could be a chiral Spinnaker. Yeah, could be a chiral Spinnaker. Yeah. So I mean, there's no direct test here, again, in the ED calculation. The only thing you showed here is that this phase seems to be connected to the zero field state. There's no real demonstration of the chiral Spinnaker state. But it's conceivable that if they are continuously connected, perhaps this could be a chiral Spinnaker state. But I have to say, though, that the more realistic model, the ab initio model, don't see that. Okay, more realistic models actually, without going into details, they don't see this kind of phase continuously connected to the Kitaev Spinnaker states. Yeah. There's some models that allows that, but that there are some perhaps a more realistic model that may not allow that. So this thing is completely open. Yeah. So I think I used my time, right? Yeah. So I'd like to end my talk here. Yeah. Thank you very much. Yeah.
So when gamma over k is zero,
yeah.
When other small magnetic
sorry, yeah.
When other small magnetic field.
Yeah. No, actually, there is a very very tiny window where it's actually stable. Yeah. So you have to zoom in. So it's known from all kinds of studies that the Visonne gap for the ferromagnetic Kitaev model is very, very small. Actually, that's the reason why a lot of people decide to study anti-ferro Kitaev model. Because for ferromagnetic Kitaev model, it's almost immediately destroyed and you get to a polarized state. But anti-ferro Kitaev model, you have a finite window. So people thought, there's a better chance to see something interesting in the anti-ferro Kitaev model. But here, the trick is that if you add a gamma term, then this critical field for polarization becomes very large, rapidly becomes very large.
So this is for ferromagnetic?
Yeah, yeah, this is for the ferrosign. For the real material, I think the ferrosign is more realistic.
Yeah, so to the 2 and 3 readings,
yeah.
So you said the ab initio calculation shows that under pressure,
yeah,
increased gamma.
Yeah.
So is there any possibility of people tried to, you know, apply strain?
Uniaxial?
Yeah, negative pressure.
The strain, uniaxial pressure.
Strain or by, you know,
yeah.
Replacing oxygen with sulfur or something like that.
Yeah, so I suppose it's possible because now they have a single crystal. Yeah, so yeah. But I don't know what the status of that experiment is. Yeah. I think what they're doing right now is an NMR measurement, detailed NMR measurements in high pressure.
Under pressure?
Yeah, hydrostatic pressure.
But what about stretching?
It's not done, but that's a very interesting suggestion, yeah. Because then you are basically breaking this XYZ bond, isotropy, yes.
If it's uniaxial strain, but if you're doing it with chemistry, maybe
okay. okay. Yeah, I don't know. I think that it's not done for the, yeah. It's not one turn for the
oxygen.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I just, you know, something like that is probably more related to this material, right? So basically, they replace all the interlayer lithium by hydrogen. And then actually what they found is then for the average structure, the AB sublattice, so AB lattice parameter is elongated, mm-hmm. but C axis parameter is actually smaller, yeah? In fact, according to ab initio calculation, you know, by going from here to here, you increase the, you actually make the material to have a more dominant Kitaev interaction. So it's actually in the right direction. Yeah. So I don't know whether something like this can be done for the 3D system. But 2D system, yeah, this is actually one way to achieve that.
In the time model, do we know any microscopic mechanism for types of disorder and effects that would naturally trap high fluxes?
Yeah, so there are some studies. Yeah, there are some studies like that for the static defects in the Kitaev model. It actually is some kind of bound state formation. I don't know. I don't remember whether there's a pi flux, but yeah. Yeah. Also, another thing I'd like to mention is that, you know, for the Honeycomb lattice model. The ground state is in the zero flux sector. But for example, for some of the three-dimensional system, the ground state is not in the zero flux sector. Actually, it's in the sort of a modulated flux sector.
Gamma.
For the gamma material, you solve the Kitaev model, then Lipps theorem doesn't apply. So you really have to numerically search what the lowest energy state is. If you do that, then you find that actually zero flux sector is not the ground state. Some other flux sector. So these things are not obvious just by looking at the model. Yeah.
So for the gamma prime term used by Hayang,
yeah.
What symmetry does it break? Does it break everything?
No, it doesn't break the iridium lattice symmetry, but you distort, there's a trigonal distortion of oxygen octahedra. Then you can generate the additional exchange interaction.
Oh, so it still keeps all the...
Still coming from the direct overlap. Still coming from the direct overlap of the orbital. Uh-huh. But by distorting the oxygen octahedra around the iridium site, you generate additional exchange part. That gives you this gamma prime term. It's very small. Uh-huh. It's very small in any estimation. But the important thing is that even a very small terms like that can make a huge impact. I think that's essentially what happens in this kind of model. So this is a very frustrating model. A small there's, you know, any perturbation is a large perturbation. Yeah.
All right, so let's thank Yong-Dak.
Okay.